Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode of The Corner. My name is Zina Wood. I'm a creative producer here at Four Bank Corners. We're based in Amsterdam and New York. Today we have Liana Fink on. She is a director and editor. We've had the pleasure of working with her quite a few times. Hi Liana.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, thank you for being here. So I think I want to start with basically how you got into it, because you know, there's always so many different ways that one can get into directing and editing. So I'd love to hear from you what your unique story is.
Yeah, I don't think I had a very traditional route. When I was like 10 or 12, like I was always a really creative kid. And when I was like 10 or 12, I decided like, I'm going to be a graphic designer. And once I like set my teeth in something, like I don't let go. I'm like a dog with a chew toy. Like, no, it's like, this is my path. I'm going to follow through. And I still do that with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So I decided I'm going to be a graphic designer. I started my studies. And in, I think, the third year, we had a lecture, like a creative lecture about Stromae, like the Belgian artist, and about how his music videos come to life and his direction style and everything. And I was like so impressed by that because there were so many layers. If you look to the music video of Papa Ute, for example, it's just like so many little details in it. And I loved that so much, like all the layers. And I felt like with graphic design, I couldn't really bring that to life in the way that I wanted. It was always like, this is the logo and it has to speak for itself, but you can't give it like any more layers. At least that's what I felt. And then the teacher that gave the lecture came to me and was like, yeah, maybe you have to do something with film, like write to different agencies and see if you can follow an internship there. But it has to be a company who does graphic design and film, because I still had to graduate as a graphic designer. So that's what I did. I wrote to a company in Amsterdam and yeah, I went on an interview there and I said, I can't do shit, but I would love to try. And yeah, they gave me a chance. And within 3 weeks, we were in Paris shooting like a Christmas commercial, and I was producing there. And I had the freedom to explore all the different stages that I wanted. They gave me really much freedom. And that company called Woodpeck at the time was like, yeah, they helped me so much. And then afterwards, after 6 or 7 months, I moved to Amsterdam and started from there as a director. So yeah.
Thanks for sharing it.
Thanks.
What I really love about that as well, it's so interesting, whoever we have here on the corner, that everyone has a different way of getting there, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my way was that I had a lot of performing background, had a lot of theater. I grew up with my mom, who's an actress and theater. She owned a theater. So there was a lot of this kind of thing. And I got into producing and directing like this way. And it's just so different for everybody, right? But somehow I feel like that's why this industry sometimes feels like the role that you're playing is almost like a calling, because it's like something, I don't know if you had this feeling, like if you maybe thought of film before you even did this thing, but I always had this little thing in my head of like, that's what I want to do, you know?
Yeah, no, I had the same, like when you see something, you're like, oh, that's so cool, but nah, I can never, like it feels like something that's really difficult to reach, and it still is, right? Like, if you really want to grow in this industry, it's really hard to get to that place, and you have to work really hard, and not a lot of people get the chance to grow to where we want to be in the end. So it's like, it's really competitive to be in this industry, I feel. So it was always like in the back of my mind, but I also made like the decision to be a graphic designer, and then to move away from that decision was really difficult. But once I made the decision, I don't think I've ever designed anything again in my life. So it was like, I love the 4 years of graphic design, and I love the whole environment of the school. But once I started doing films, like, no, I've never done graphic design in my life. It felt like such a lifetime ago. Like,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, good on you for getting into it. Yes.
Yes.
Very exciting. I'm going to go into our Undefined Beauty campaign that we produced for Coty, and you came on as the editor. So the Undefined Beauty campaign was really special. I mean, it's something that we're really proud of. And as you can see, we had these diverse voices, faces, people speaking about what beauty means to them. And the whole idea behind Coty's vision for this was that they wanted to redefine the word beauty.
Yeah, or and undefine so, it.
Actually. Or undefine, yes. There we go.
Yes.
Editor's always checking.
Just checking, like it's undefined.
producer's like using all these words and you're like, no, it's undefined.
We're undefining the word beauty. Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did. So CEO Sue Nabi, she reached out with an open letter to dictionary houses that was also supported by the board of Coty, basically asking to undefine the word because it just doesn't suit our contemporary values anymore. And it, you know, it's really powerful. And it's so incredible when I feel like when our industry gets behind something so valuable. And so, yeah, the process was obviously we had the strategy come from a creative director who then came to us. And we did a lot of work thinking of how we were going to ask these interview questions to the respondents, because it's almost like when you're writing a thesis, right? Like the way you ask a questionnaire is going to determine the results.
Yeah.
And so we had such intricate work coming up with these questions to ask them in the right way, also so that we weren't being sensationalist or like trying to activate emotion in people, which can lead to being more unethical, but also to really get pure authenticity and to really get people's stories. Within how long was this piece?
Like, I think final piece was like 4 or 5 minutes,
right? To get all of that, you know, across. So we did all of that, and then of course it came to you in the edit, which is such a big responsibility, because we've done all this work with all this kind of, you know, really intense thinking about how to do this. We shot the whole thing over 2 days here in our studio, and then you came on board, and then you have to take all of that basically and not change it, but also change it. And yeah, so could you tell me a little bit about that process and how that was for you?
Yeah, so I obviously knew about the process and how like how many people were coming in, with like 100 something people, and we have to edit it in like a couple of minute piece, which is very challenging by itself, let alone to get that point across and that feeling, which you also want to keep that authenticity of the people. Like, you want to kind of course you want to make sure that yes, this is the message that we are getting across, but I also want to feel like this is the most authentic answer that they're giving, so that is what I'm going to use. I don't want to edit it in a way that we are biased by watching it or editing it. Like, I want to be as authentic as possible. And the good thing was that it was like hours and hours of footage. We shot it over 2 days, but two different locations. It was like 8 hours a day, maybe more of footage. So I was really grateful that the team of FBC like helped with like narrowing it down a little bit. And from there, I just like, I went for it. And like every little piece that got some emotion out of me, like, yes, that has to be in there. Like, emotion is really what drives me in my work. And that's what I really felt this piece could, like, bring it to life. Like, the piece could bring that to life. And then I think the first edit was about, like, 8 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I showed it to you guys. And I think Serena was sitting behind me and I heard, like... And I was like, is she crying? And I didn't want to look, but I heard her crying. I was like, okay, if she's crying, then that's good. Then I did my job. And then we showed it to other people involved in the project. And they all like, I was really happy that I could watch their reactions. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when you have a project, you just work on a project and then you get like a list of feedback back.
Yeah.
And you have no idea like what kind of emotion did it trigger for you. Because like I said, that is really important to me. Like, does it get an emotion out of people? Like, mm-hmm. if it's happy, sad, like, it doesn't matter what kind, but I want to feel like, what do you feel? So it was really nice for me to have that kind of, I could like just look at people watching the film over and over again and see what kind of emotion they got from it. And from there, I just build and build and build and lots of different revisions to see what works and what not. And
Totally. Yeah, because I remember also there was a phase where we were also really walking the fine line of not making it just sad, you know, like, because we wanted to show that there's different nuances. And, and you know, if you just play for an emotion, then that's when it starts almost feeling inauthentic.
Yeah.
So I really respect how you navigated that.
It has to be a balance. It has to be a balance between like, hey, this is what it makes me feel like. If we're looking at the word beauty and beautiful, like, if it makes you sad the way it is in the dictionary, then yes, that's definitely what has to come across. But there's also like, we also need to feel like what the word beauty can mean for people, and the beauty that is with that, and the the good feelings that you can have with that. So to balance that in a video and get people to sign the petition is a fine line to walk. I'm happy on the way we did that.
And it also, it got a lot of support from global ambassadors, Priyanka Chopra Jonas. She publicly supported it, and Olympic diver Tom Daly, who we also filmed at Yakoti. So it was really amazing to see these people that also within their work include activism or value-based work speak about it.
That's really, really nice to see.
For sure. So it had a life. It still has a life. It's out there. It was a great process. Really, really cool.
It was. It was really fun to work on it. And I think the time frame that we worked on it, like, it was filmed, and I think like 3 weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later, it was already presented, like, on a really big live stream where I was also present. You were also there. Like, to see it on a big screen there, and the emotions of people again in the audience, and the silence that I got afterwards, that's what I really liked. Like, in some videos, I just like started clapping immediately after, and this one I felt like it took them 2 or 3 seconds to respond to it, which I really liked.
I agree. That was a special moment for sure. So, Liana, how would you define your style as a director?
So, I think emotion plays a really big part in my work. So, I want the viewer to really feel something. So, first of all, it's like emotion is on top of the list. And I like to have it like with a little bit of a raw edge. So, not everything has to be like silky smooth or like thought out, like till the detail. Like, I can have a really nice balance between that. So, when I'm working on documentaries or something, I like the raw vibe on it, like the little moments in between, like the really unexpected moments. That is something that really fits my style. What I also really like is to, like, really actual topics, I would like to incorporate that in the videos that I create, so in the style that I have. So I think it can look really beautiful, but it has to mean more than that. So I want to provoke, like, emotion, but I also want to, like, have the viewer really, like, educate the viewer a little bit. So that's what I think is really important, to have that educational, like, point of view in there as well.
So do you feel like part of your job as a director is almost like having commentary on what's currently going on in the world?
I focus a lot on sustainability. I focus a lot on equality as well. I want to make sure that people feel represented in the films that I create. I think that is very important, because for me, it's just like one perspective. Yes, I'm a woman in the industry, but I'm also just a white woman in the industry. And I feel it's important to have different kind of topics and views on that, and on, just to incorporate different kinds of perspectives in the video.
So, I, for instance, was really interested in the Pata running project. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I feel like something about your style being wanting to mean more, I feel I can really see that within that project.
Yeah, so Pata and Nike project was a really nice project to start with, because it was like my first project as a director that I got to do. It was for the company Woodpeck, which I did the internship with, and when I came back as a freelancer working for them, they offered me this project, which was like really cool because it was my first project as a director. And I took it on with both hands, and it was like a very small budget as well, like how all things start in the beginning, right? You have to, like, I think all the budget went into like renting equipment and locations and stuff like that. And I think we even like almost like paid ourselves like maybe 100 euros or something. Like, we really put all in it, and it was really nice. And what I like about that project, it is about educating youth and helping youth find their passion and their way in life. And so what Nike and Pata running team did is, they gathered youth, they did a tryout, and they run 5K. If you made it, then they selected you to their team, and then they trained to a marathon. So it was not only training, like, physically, but also mentally. Like, how do you transform, like, how mentally do you prepare for a marathon? I mean, these were kids from, like, 16 to 22 years old or something. So it's like, how do you, like, mentally prepare for that? And do you need help with anything? Like, they were there not only for the running part and getting mentally, like, physically fit, but also mentally. Like, if you struggle with things at home, at school, with your boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, whatever, they were there to help you, like mentally guide you as well. And I felt that that was such a strong and important aspect of it, because yes, it is good to get the youth out there and run and be mentally or like physically fit. Mm-hmm. But the mental part is also like a really big aspect. And I wanted to bring that alive in that piece as well.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was the first documentary ever that I did and the first ever piece that I directed. And then a year later, they did the project again with a new group. And that one was also shown as a premiere in the Pathé, which was really nice. So hundreds of people came to watch that. And that was like the first moment that I felt like, whoa.
Yes.
Like, I'm just doing this for two years now. And like, it's being shown on this big screen. And I had like great people to work on that team. And yeah, the whole soundtrack was made by two of my friends.
Nice.
And they created the whole soundtrack. And those little things and those little layers that I got to incorporate in the documentary was really cool. And then the third project was also around the new marathon that they were supposed to run, and they were supposed to run it in London. So it was the first, like, let's go abroad and run it there. So it was January 2020, where me and my DOP, Mark Groen, we went in the city of Amsterdam, and we were walking around, and it was just after Christmas, and it was really busy, and lots of like tourists and everything. And he was like, have you read the news? Like, there's this virus in China somewhere. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it. And he was like, listen to my words. The whole city like is going to be empty in a couple of months. Like, no one's going to be in the street. We have to shoot the busyness and the crowds of the whole city.
Yeah.
So we went the whole day. We spent just like filming lots of people on the street and just like see how full damn square was and how many people and all that stuff. And I felt like a little bit like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
But he was right, because unfortunately a couple of months later, like, yep, everything stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole city was empty, and we filmed it again. And the project stopped with that as well. But we also felt like we can't really stop it here, but because even if we can't like run the marathon and can't go to London, you know, it still has an effect on the mental part,
yeah,
of the team,
of
right?
The people,
of
yeah,
the people. So we hosted an interview where we just filmed a couple of kids from the team,
mm-hmm,
and talked about their whole experience for this project. And we released it that way, like, to be continued or not, like, what's it gonna be?
Yeah, for sure. So I know that sustainability is a big theme in your work. I can really relate to that. I work a lot with the natural world, and I have a lot of focus on conservation and nature back in Africa, for instance. I do a lot of work about space as well as space exploration, this kind of adventure of our natural world and exploring it. And I feel sometimes sustainability themes also tie in nicely with that, because this is what we're trying to conserve, yeah, right? And trying to keep safe, keep here. So I'd love to speak to you about your documentary you did for a digital festival and how they're trying to become a circular festival, or already have elements of that. Because, you know, as artists, many times we're either attending kinds of festivals or conferences, or even a film shoot, you could say, is kind of acts like a big event or a festival, you know. And I know there are a lot of film shoots, for instance, that are really trying to keep their footprint low, you know. So yeah, what are your thoughts on the process of digital, and how did it come about?
Yeah, so I was brought on to the project by Session One. They already were in touch with the client. They did some projects before, and they needed some extra help on it. So the basics of the project were already there. They already knew who they were going to film and everything. And then I was brought in as a director and as executive producer as well for that project. And as soon as I jumped into to that project, I was like, yeah, I actually know very little about all this. Like, when you go to a festival, you don't necessarily think about like how much that does damage to the world. Like, all the artists flying out, like, some people are coming from all over the country by car, or even like from different countries flying as well. And just the whole way that we need the energy on the festival, like the sound and everything. It just takes so much. Yep. It is super polluting, and I didn't know anything about it. Of course, you know, like, yeah, we don't need the plastic cups laying on the ground on the festival. We are hopefully all aware of that. Mm-hmm. And like the choice that we make in food, like, we are aware of like the consequences on that, but like the other things, like an artist flying out, you don't necessarily think of like what happens there with like the world. So it was really nice to dive into that. And the one thing that I really liked was the P to T concept. So yes. It was really fun because...
Please tell us about the P to T concept, yes. Liana.
So, technically, I don't know everything about it, but...
I would hope not.
it's not like
do
I know how the process...
Do any of us know anything about it?
But it was really funny because there was this big installation on the festival, and they use like space technology, because
there it is, I'm telling you.
Yes,
space always comes back to Earth.
Yes, because when you're in space, they also, in a way that I don't completely understand, recycle the pee so you can drink or eat or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they reuse it. So what they do is you can pee there. They have like really nice stalls. They also have like urinals for women, which is really nice because you
Amazing.
Don't have to sit down on the dirty gross. Toilet seats or like a gross Dixie or whatever. Like, oof. Yeah, so this was like urinals for women, which were perfectly. I tested them out, and then so you pee, and then 20 minutes later you get a cup of fresh mint tea.
20 minutes later.
Yes, within 20 minutes they do something.
something happens. We really hope.
The process, and then you get to drink it.
Wow.
And it just tastes like regular tea. Like, you don't notice anything. And they want to see if it works on like festival grounds, and if it works here, then it could also work in countries where there is a limited supply of water. It's an idea to incorporate this whole P to T system for them as well, so yeah, we can like sustain ourselves. So I think that's a really beautiful project, and that's just one of the little things that is happening there. They do like the vegan food, and the way they generate their energy is all like through sustainable energy as well.
Yeah.
And they really try to, or not try, I think they are the first carbon neutral, zero emission festival in the Netherlands. So that's their mission, and it's really nice to see how that works. Yeah,
yeah,
it was really nice to be part of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because, you know, like a festival, one could also see it as, it's a pretty privileged position to be in, right? Like, that your life is so great that you can just go and have wonderful recreation for a couple of days, you know what
yes.
I mean? Like, there's some people that can't do that or have little access to doing that. So it's just so great that a whole bunch of people are coming together to enjoy life, which is beautiful, but at the same time are like really helping efforts to make sure that this can keep happening, and also even developing new technology that can be taken to other places. It's really special.
Yeah, so there's also this thing where they like the artists, they offer for the artists and for the visitors as well, they offer like a tool where you can see how much emissions it is to come to the festival. So if you come by bike or by plane, train, car.
Right.
And you can also, if you come by plane or anything, you can choose to fly through sustainable aviation fuel, which is a really nice option, especially for artists who have like bigger funds to, pay for that. Like, as an festival goer, I can understand that we're not there yet, because it is expensive. It is like so much more expensive than a regular ticket, and the world is already really expensive, but the fact that it is there and you can choose, or you can at least see what the emissions are to coming to the festival, to make yourself aware of that, that's already really beautiful. And we spoke to some artists about that, like, did you know, and how do you come to the festival, and just to see different perspectives of that. Yeah, I think that's really nice.
Yeah, for sure. It's so interesting how, right, in our job or in our industry, like, what you're working on, you get so much information about it. Like, I can remember, you know, working on random projects, like, all of a sudden now I know tons about trucks and the truck industry and like this kind of thing, right? Depending on where you're producing or where you're directing. And that's one of the things I love about being a producer, is that, you know, I just get this very intensive knowledge about a certain topic every now and then, you know. It's just,
what's the most random topic that you've had to work on?
Wow. Now you're asking me something. I once did a commercial for something called, actually, I don't even know if this completely went off the ground because they were like in a funding phase, but it was something called the poop shoot. And it was for dogs. So it was like some contraption that someone had invented to like make it easier to pick up the dog's poop. And yeah, that was one of the things. Wow, we're really like divulging into pee and poop. Like, okay, guys. So
that's the future.
The corner. Yeah. The future is. Yeah, but there's been some really random stuff. And also just the people you get to meet, right? I mean,
yeah.
I once produced something. I was the unit manager on like a Sky Warner Brothers production in the Everglades in Florida. And we were doing these like monster trucks, right? And like this monster truck racing. And so you get super involved with this monster truck community in the Everglades. You know, there's like someone's got a baby alligator like standing here. You know, it's just interesting.
Super random.
Awesome random people. One day you're in New York City, the next day you're in the Everglades, like in a whole different ecosystem of people and values and things that excite them. And I absolutely love that. I love connecting with people in that way.
Yeah, putting yourself into an environment that you normally maybe naturally wouldn't go into, and then just exploring anything like, oh, this is fun, or like, this is not the world that I want to be a part of, or something. Like, the contrast between that is really fun, and learning new things. Yeah,
and there's always learning.
The learning process, that's what's fun. Like, I like to educate people through the films that I make, but it's also nice to be educated.
Like, 100%.
Yeah.
I don't see how one can't be, right? Like, it's, I mean, I think, well, I guess one could be more narrow-minded or something, but like there's so much room for learning new things in this industry.
I don't think there's ever been a project where I didn't learn at least one thing, you know? There's always something. If it's about the craft itself, like about directing or camera or editing, then I learn about that, or the topic that we're shooting, or it's really nice to dive into that and do your research. So yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your work for Jocera. I know that you won Best Director of the Music Video for Pure Magic International Film Festival. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you were, you guys were finalists as well in a couple others, right?
Yeah, so we were finalists for the Red Movie Awards, which is in France, which is really nice. And some other, some other events around Europe as well. So I think we got like 4 or 5 awards.
Yeah.
Which was really nice, because those were also my first awards ever that I got to receive. So yeah, on that project, which was really close to my heart as well, it was such a big achievement. Yeah.
And I can totally see your themes as well in this work.
Yeah, so you can see lots of femininity in the work as well as diversity and equality as well. I think lots of those themes come back to it, and the way of filming, it's like still raw, brings an emotion to it. So yeah, all the things that I love working on the most, are just in there.
Yeah. And you did that piece in Panama.
Yes, we went to Panama for that piece. So Jocera was so happy with the music video that we did for Juicy, that she was like, I want to collaborate with you again. And the whole team is going to be Panamanian, but I wanted you to fly over and help out with your project, which was really, really cool.
Yeah.
We didn't have the team ready yet there, so I was responsible for finding the team. So I found a drone operator and stuff like that. But we also needed locations. So we needed like 8 different locations or something, or 6.
Yeah.
And it was really fun, because I was just on Google Maps, like walking through it and seeing like what could work, and reaching out to people. And we had our producer, who was Panamanian as well, and she lived there for the time being. And she helped with like scouting, and she went on like different scouts. And we all did this from the Netherlands. And then we got there and we just like had this whole crew of like 12 to 16 people, and we shot the music video there, and it was such a nice experience, because it was really nice to be in that environment and to really feel, because it was a really tribal song as well, so to feel that and the heritage of the country and all the dancers, because it was a dance piece as well, all the dancers were Panamanian. We had them on set, and it was it was such a lovely experience. Yeah. It was really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. I love, I feel like most of the time now we do our pre-production in the country where we live, and then we sort of go over for the next piece, right?
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see it from a screen and like really get into it, and then be able to make all those creative decisions remotely. I mean, it's amazing that we can do that now. It's great.
It is. Yeah. And it's also very strange because, I mean, I never lived in a country. I've never been there before, but I do have to make decisions on where we're going to shoot and what were the best locations, even though I have no idea, like, what are the best locations. So I spent like weeks on just like finding, like, I think this is the best part or this is the best part. And then it turned out to be like beautiful. And even the people that we were shooting with, like the Panamanian crew, they'd never been to those places.
Wow.
And they
interesting.
Were like, wow, this is so pretty. And there were like crazy days as well, because we were shooting for 4 days straight. But it was like, we wanted to have like sunrise or sundown. And we sometimes had to leave like at 12 at night.
Yeah.
And then we arrived at 4, and at 5 the sun came up, and we were driving there for hours and we didn't see anything because streetlights don't exist.
Yeah.
So we arrived, and then the sun came up, and it was like a beautiful desert. We just arrived from the jungle to the desert, to the swamp, to the sea, like all these different kinds of environments. And yeah, it was such a nice time to be there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. So in the other music video you did for Joe Sarah, who came up with the fruit concept?
Well,
which I really enjoyed.
Yes, it was really fun. It was so Joe Sarah came to me with like an idea, like, hey, this music video, this song is about orgasm, like closing the orgasm gap between men and women, because there is not enough talk about it, still taboo, and I want to do something with that. And then she was like, I want to make it, like, the song is called Juicy, and I want to make it juicy, and I envision fruits, I envision nudity, I envision everything. And then she's like, hand me, like, I think it was like a Word document with like one page of like this and this and this and this, I want all of this. And it was so much, and I had to narrow it down, like, okay, this is gonna work, this is not gonna work. It's like, she had so many ideas. She's such a creative. It's really fun working with her.
Yeah.
And we narrowed it down. I created a treatment and I showed it, and she's like, yep. She had no notes. She's like, yep, let's go, we're gonna do this. And then we bought all the fruit. I think she ordered the fruit, and was like, we had a really small budget for this, because it was like, it was a nice production, but it was like, we're all doing this because we want to get the message out, and not we don't want to get paid too much for this. We want to spend all the money on whatever we need.
On so the
I think we spent like half the budget on the fruit. And it was also winter, and we needed lots of summery fruit.
Oh.
So we ordered like papayas, which were like totally white still inside and everything, so that didn't work. And then we ordered from like gorillas and stuff, we ordered like papaya, like one papaya for like €8 or something, so we could use it. So
we
spent hundreds of euros on fruit, and then oiling it, and and then afterwards eating everything and bringing all the stuff home, because we also don't want to waste the things that we bought, like, especially me being in like really into like sustainability and everything, like throwing away all the fruit that we just bought is like a no-go. So we had like at lunch table, we had like a huge pile of fruit, and people could bring home the papayas and the like everything. So it was really fun, and it was such a juicy shoot the whole day. It was really nice.
Yes.
And the most of the team, the crew, were also women.
Yeah,
because it was also Joe Sarah had to be naked almost the whole day, and she's really comfortable in that. Like, I remember her just grabbing a cup of coffee, not putting on her robe again, but she just walked naked through. Like, oh yeah, let me just get. She's really free, and that's really nice, because it's really easy to work with her in that way. And yeah, everyone on set felt really comfortable with like just the nudity, and like everyone's really respectful, and it was nice to work on a project that intimate.
Yeah, for sure.
And
to do it right, right?
Yeah, because, and to do it right. Yeah,
yeah. There's certain steps that one, if you're gonna work like that, there's a lot of. I mean, I've done some shoots like this too. There's a lot of like preparatory stuff you have to do, really, conversations. Everyone needs to know what's happening when, which restroom can be used, which, you know, where's the crew going to be, if it's a closed set, you know, where can the crew not be, all this kind of thing. It really, really adds to the just like feeling safe and intimacy, and as well as the what you're actually going to do with the work. Because if someone doesn't feel like all of those logistics are in order, then you immediately don't feel safe. I think this is something, as a producer, I really feel passionate about, because it's sure, sometimes you have a lot of logistics to solve, but in this case, it's like so important because it also relates to how a human being feels.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. Yeah. And also, normally when you're on a set, it's almost like take as much pictures as you want because it's good to promote and everything. And I was like, everyone just like put your phones away.
Yeah.
We hired someone who was going to take pictures and shoot some video all day. So we like, we got that covered. We sent you everything when we're done. But just for safety and to feel safe, like, please don't take any pictures. And
yeah, of course.
We also had, there was one scene where we hired a man, like a dancer, to dance with Josera and touch her, like touch her in all different kind of places. And like normally you would hire like someone like an intimacy coach or anything, but we obviously didn't have any budget for that. So for me, I felt like it was my responsibility as a director, as like the one that created the concept and the environment and hired all the people on the set and stuff.
Yeah.
It was my responsibility, felt like, to make sure that that safe space was really a safe space for everyone there, for like the man having to touch Josera, for Josera being touched. I mean, that obviously is not something you just like, yeah, just do what feels good, because it doesn't work that way, because what feels good for you or what is safe for you isn't the other way around. So it was really nice to communicate through that, and the response that we had from the whole crew and the way that Josera felt safe with me and with the crew was really nice. And that resulted in the second music video, which won all the awards. So that was, that was really nice.
It's amazing. Yeah, I feel like so many times I've seen cases where the leadership roles in our industry are really able to transcend how things should go, like how it should be. You know, this kind of focus we have in our industry of like treating people fairly, equal pay, all these kind of intimacy questions we ask, closing the orgasm gap, all this kind of thing. Sometimes you see the creative industry really tackling these issues or these conversations. And then I think roles like being the director or the producer, without it being like, I'm the director, I get to decide everything, you do have to decide many things, because you're a leader on the day. And so there's a lot of responsibility that is there for you. But even though it's a leadership position, it also comes with being able to collaborate with people, being able to really understand what feels safe to you versus what feels safe to you, for instance. And that's amazing. I mean, imagine applying that to so many other industries. Not that they're also not doing their own work as well, and, you know, wonderful things are coming out, but it's a really good example to set, I think.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a fine line as well, because we hear so many things go wrong in this industry as well. There are so many places where people get harassed or like where it's not a safe environment. And from the day that I started in this industry, I felt like I was surrounded by a lot of men. And of course, I didn't study for this, so I felt like I really have to work my way up. So in the beginning, especially, I was like 17 or 18 when I became a director. Like, I felt like, who's going to listen to me? I mean, like, I'm just a kid. I felt like, and sometimes the clients were like 40 or 50 years old. And like, I have to tell you what to do. Like, how does that work? So the hierarchy in that way, I always felt like it was really difficult to move up. And also because people never saw me as someone with authority on the set. So for a long time, and even like a couple of weeks ago, they still thought that I'm like an intern.
What was that scenario again?
Yes, so a couple of weeks ago I was on set and we were shooting a TVC, and someone came up to me, like I think it was the client or like a client, someone from the clientele, and he asked like, oh yeah, nice that you're here, you're the intern, right? And I'm like, I don't want to get offended by that, but also like, you can't really know, but to assume that I'm just like here to bring you coffee is like, that's like, and that still happens. And sometimes I tell him, it's like, no, that's like, that's from 10 years ago, right? It doesn't happen anymore, but it does. And when I walk onto the set, I often realize that when I walk with my DOP, which is mostly, I work with a close team and with people that I really like working, and it's mostly a man. And it always happens that the client always introduces themselves to the man first. Mm. And I'm always like, I feel always that hierarchy already happens really early on. And then in the beginning, I would never like say, hi, my name is Leona and I'm the director of the day. Like, make myself take that stand and say like, hey, this is this is my place, because I also feel like, is it my place? Do I have to claim this? Like, I struggle with that, and I struggled with that, but I sometimes still do. But it does get easier, because once I establish it, I feel like they slowly start to respect me a little bit more. And I don't want to feel on set like, yes, this really big hierarchy is going on. But like you said, I do have to make decisions, and like together with the producer, like we do have, if we don't make decisions, then it's going to be chaos anyway. And I always wanted to be a collaborative process, and I always wanted to have different opinions from everyone. Like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Do we have a go? Everyone happy with it? If someone is not, then I'm really open to that discussion, because I feel it is really a team collaboration rather than just two people shouting like, this is how I want to get it done. And of course my style has to be present, because that's also why people hire me, to show that style. But so is the DOP, and so is the gaffer, and so is the makeup artist. Like, everyone is hired because their style fits the concept or anything. So I feel like it's really important to have that collaboration. But yeah, as a woman in the industry, I find it difficult to find that place in the hierarchy sometimes. How does it feel for you?
I too am a woman in the industry.
Yes.
I would say, so I started my career fully in New York, and it's so funny because, you know, that was about 10 years ago, and I was also almost always just with men on the crew, and I was very comfortable in that position, because I don't know, I kind of liked riffing off men, like jokes, and like my humor sometimes can be very like, sketch comedy vibes. So there was a lot of like joking, and I had a very good experience. But I also realized that in the beginning, claiming that authority for me, it became almost like acting like a man. So I did it that way. So I went full on claiming, but like in a way that maybe didn't bring some of my more subtle, graceful qualities to the table. And then, I think my development was basically really thinking about who I want to be in the industry and what I want to bring, because I don't want to dumb down my other qualities. I mean, I'm a strong woman, you know, I'm not a strong man. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a subtle difference, but that subtle difference definitely became more and more awakened. And, you know, 10 years ago, Me Too hadn't even happened. And like, Black Lives Matter hadn't even happened. And there's so many things that hadn't happened. So it was kind of a different ball game at that stage. But then as all these conversations came out and how people just started speaking more about celebrating your differences, I think that also gave me a lot of confidence to just be like, oh yeah, but I also want to be flamboyant and I also want to be sexy. And actually that's when in 2018, I started the project Space Weather Girl, which is what I work under a lot in my original own work, because Space Weather Girl is exciting, she's strong, but she's sexy, and she blends science and humanities, you know, but she's smart, and she's all these things together. And for me, I was working a lot in like the straight production company way, and I was really like, you know, I was carrying things that were too heavy for me and like proving my, you know, like, and I was like, no. At some stage I was also like, you know, it's a little funny, but you know, I'll be like, no, sorry, I can't carry that, man. Like, I can't. I just can't carry that.
Yeah.
Find someone else to carry it. So it's these little boundaries that you set as well for yourself in your career and in your life. And yeah, now I'm happy to be at a place where I feel like I'm much more all-rounded and standing up for who I am, basically. Yeah.
No, that's really nice. I feel like lots of the times I also feel like a little bit of a chameleon. So I really adapt to whatever situation I'm in.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm doing that less and less in a work environment. Mm. So in the beginning was like, yeah, I want to be, because I was like, my career was raised with a bunch of boys, you know? So I was always around men and always like goofing around.
Yeah.
And I felt like, yeah, that's what I belong. Like, no one would like ever give me a hug. I was like a fist bump. Like that was like, I was the fist bump girl. Like, that was like me. And then I started like being in different groups as well. And they like yeah, they accepted me a little bit more for like the woman that I am or something. Like, yeah. I felt like they always also did that, but I was always their like little sister because I started really young and they like taught me everything. So I was always like in their shadow a little bit, even though I probably put myself in their shadow a little bit, but also because that was always the hierarchy that we had. So with the people that I worked with,
yeah,
they were always higher than me in that hierarchy, even though my job at that point was sometimes having to step up.
Right.
And then, like you said, like blending in with the boys, being one of the boys, and then afterwards was like, well, that's also not what I'm telling through my stories. Like,
right.
If I'm telling about the closing the orgasm gap, I'm not saying that we should be men in bed or something. Like, the women.
Exactly.
Like, so it was really, yeah, it is still really difficult to find that balance between that. But like you said, like, noticing the little changes and being more yourself, I feel like on a work space, like on the work level, I get more and more into the space of, yeah, claiming that spot and being
totally
authentically myself. Because if I can't be authentically myself on a set, how can I get my point or message across through my style if I can't show the true me?
Exactly.
So that's, yeah, that's really important to me. Yeah,
yeah, thanks for sharing. That's really awesome to connect on that. Yeah, yeah,
thanks. So I'm also part of the Studio Her collective,
yes,
which is really nice because it's a collective for women in the film industry, film and photography industry. And I think we're like 40, 45 people strong now. And it's really nice because we're in this group chat where we can share knowledge with each other and yeah, we can like form our own groups. And if you need someone on set, that is really nice. And a couple of months ago, I did this really nice project with them, which was for Fairbike, which was about a part in the batteries for electrical bikes that is being resourced out of mines in South Africa, for example. And yeah, we did a piece on the mining conditions there because there are not really great on most of the mines there. And yeah, we wanted to raise awareness for that. So we did a whole piece, and I never worked with a female gaffer before. So that was like a new experience. It was really cool just to see how much the community can do and how much we can push each other. And yeah,
yeah,
like a whole diverse crew was just really nice to see.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And I, because I obviously saw, I came to the launch of Studio Hers, yeah, I think just them throwing a party basically, and your work was featured, which was really cool, the Overstoker project.
Yes.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit more about that project? Because I think that came about of you really wanting to do something and collaborate with an artist, and yeah, it became like a important spec work piece.
Yeah, yeah, so I really wanted to do spec work for a while, which touched some like heavier topics on like mental health as well. And I know that's, I knew Staranaka already, like she's a friend of a friend, and I thought like I know her way of writing and I know her songs and her poetry and like her spoken word kind of things, and I know that this fits with what I have in mind to create. Like I had this themes around maybe depression or yeah, some self-exploration, stuff like that. And I contacted her and said like, hey, we should do a collaboration. Let's see what we can do. And she said like, I told her my idea a little bit. And she's like, I think I have like a song that is really dear to me. She's like, every time I sing it, I get emotional. And I was like, well, that's probably going to be it, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we want. And she sent it to me. I listened to it. And from the get-go, I knew like, I know what I want to create with this. And I wrote a treatment, I wrote the whole concept from scratch. I was like, if we're gonna do this, then I need full creative freedom, because I sometimes feel it's important to do something that it's fully me,
yeah,
instead of like having different kinds of input from like big agencies or anything. Like, it's nice to have that full creative freedom. And yeah, I created a project that was really close to me and was really about, so the song of Stella was really about finding the ground with herself and being stuck in a loop, like feeling that you're not good enough and trying to get out of that, which is also something that I can resonate with in my work, like really trying to expand and grow, but also feel like you're stuck in a loop and don't know exactly where to go. So I created a project for that, which was also shown in a loop. So the whole idea behind it was like, we feel like we're stuck in a loop, so we're gonna show the loop. So it's like you can watch it in infinite kind of ways as well. And for instance, there's this, yeah, we wanted to create a little bit of moving paintings. Like, it's like almost photographs, but little movement in it. And yeah, combining music and art and photography and film in together, like having that collaboration, was really nice. And there's one of the shots that was, we were playing around with glass, so like with shards, because I feel like if you look into a mirror, for example, you can see yourself, but if you break the mirror, you have like a distorted reflection of yourself, so you cannot really see the full picture. Or if you cannot see like the real picture of you, of your own reflection. So if you have a self-image which doesn't reflect on who you really are, like how are you going to be able to make decisions based on like just that one piece that you're zooming in on? So we see her as well holding that one piece like really, really tight, because we as humans tend to focus on one little aspect in our lives, which we just like zoom in like, oh, I don't like this about myself, or oh, I don't like this about others. And we just zoom in on that part and forget the rest. So we feel like, yes, that little shard that I'm holding on to too tight until my hand starts bleeding is maybe that's the whole picture, because that's the only thing you can see. But all the other shards that are underground and everything that you can create the puzzle with and finish the puzzle with is something that you don't see. So to really zoom in on that and really have all these layers into the film is, yeah, it was really close to me in all the different ways that the viewer can look at it as well. Yeah. Like the Stromae projects as well, like with his work. He's really zooming into that and have all these little details. And yeah, that really, my voice really came alive with that piece, I feel.
Yeah, that's amazing to feel that. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It was so nice to chat with you, and I'll see you on the next project.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.